We are live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and today we bring you a magnificent bel canto tragedy, Bellini's Norma, with a powerhouse cast. Soprano Angela Meade stars in the towering title role of the Druid High Priestess. She's joined by mezzo-soprano Jamie Barton as Norma's innocent rival, Adalgisa, and Joseph Colea as the faithless Puglione. Maestro Joseph Colinari conducts in the haunting new production by Sir David McVicar that opened the Met's season in the fall. During intermission, we'll speak with our stars, and we'll have a visit from the Met's general manager, Peter Gelb. Stay with us.
And we'll be rejoining New York in a moment after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Now it's time to go back to New York for the introduction to Act One of Bellini's Norma.
I'm Mary Jo Heath, and commentator Ira Siff is here with me for Bellini's Norma. Ira, this opera has a certain mystique, and a lot of that is because of the title role. It's simply one of the most notoriously difficult parts, period, isn't it?
It certainly is, and we'll hear that within the first 15 minutes of her music leading into the iconic aria Casta Diva. She has to deliver powerful declamatory phrases, long legato lines, florid passages.
Well, and sopranos who can handle these demands are few and far between. We think of names like Maria Callas and Joan Sutherland.
And the vocal demands are tied to the dramatic intensity of the role, which never lets up. The opera can have a profound emotional impact. You know, even Wagner said it makes you weep.
Yes. So let's talk about the story. A little background, it takes place in ancient Gaul under Roman occupation. The people are led by the Druid High Priestess Norma, but she's betrayed them and broken her vows. She's secretly had an affair with the Roman proconsul Puglione, and they've even had two children. Act One opens with Norma's father, the chieftain Orvezzo, leading the Druids in a prayer for revenge against the Romans. Then Puglione arrives in secret, but not to see Norma. He's fallen in love with her disciple, the novice priestess Adalgisa. He fears Norma's revenge. He has an aria here as he tells a friend about a terrifying nightmare he had of a phantom arising to punish him and Adalgisa.
But Puglione snaps out of his reverie as the gong signals Norma's approach, and he declares that love will protect him. This is a bold cabaletto with a swaggering feel to the music.
No sooner does he leave than we hear a grand choral procession, and Norma appears. She proclaims to the people that the time is not right for a revolt. As she prays to the moon goddess for peace, we hear that ravishing aria, Casta Diva, Chaste Goddess.
It has one of the most sublime melodies ever written. Norma's ascending phrases and vocal flourishes rise above the soft choral lines, creating a magical effect. We see the power she wields, but we also recognize her vulnerability because her cabalettas about Puglione, she expresses privately her yearning for the happy love they once shared.
She doesn't know about his new passion, and Adalgisa is completely unaware of Puglione's relationship with Norma. Adalgisa has fallen in love with him, and after the others leave, she secretly lingers.
And the music in her brief scena reflects her gentle, devout nature, but also her passion.
So she prays to God to protect her from her own feelings. But Puglione confronts her, and he asserts that there is nowhere she could flee, that he wouldn't follow her.
Puglione begins this duet in a minor key, and Adalgisa takes up his melody. She's in despair over the idea of betraying her vows, but the cabaletta's in a major key with an insistent rhythm as Puglione kind of convinces her to overcome her doubts.
Yes, he convinces her to renounce her vows and leave with him for Rome. Now, the next scene takes place in Norma's dwelling, where she tells her children's nursemaid, Clotilda, that she senses Puglione might abandon her. When they hear someone approaching, Clotilda takes the children to hide. It's Adalgisa, who's tormented by guilt and has come to confess. Adalgisa describes to Norma how she was wooed and fell in love, And Norma is reminded of her own past. And this is the first of two sublime duets for
them.
The
two women trade long, plaintive lines, and Adalgisa begs Norma to save her. Norma releases her from her vows, and they share a marvelous cabaletta full of joyful, florid passages. The close harmonies reflect their strong bond.
But there's also the connection they're not aware of, Puglione.
Mm.
And when he appears, all three of them realize the devastating truth. And Ira, I just love the spectacular trio that ends this act.
Yeah, first Norma explodes in rage at Puglione, cascading huge vocal leaps. Finally, she says to Adalgisa, it would be better for you to die than to have met this man.
We'll hear in order of appearance Matthew Rose as Oroveso, Joseph Calleja as Puglione, Adam Deagle as Flavio, Angela Mead as Norma, Jamie Barton as Adalgisa, and Michelle Bradley is Clotilda.
Thank you. Spenta la prima fiamma. abisso aperto e lui batte in lo stesso. Altra avresti tu, ma la son messo un'altra, sì, Narcisa, tu la vedrai, fior di uno senza viso, di candore d'amor. Ministra il tempio di questo dio di sangue, e la appare come raggio di stella in ciel turbato. Misero amico, amato, se tu del pari, io no fidanza, e mira non temi tu di norma, atroce, orrenda me la presenta, il mio rimorso estremo. Un sogno annarra, in lamentarlo io tremo. Me qual alla tardi venere era la Gisa a Roma, cinta di penne candide sparso di fior la chioma, udia di me nei cantici venian fumar gli incensi, veran rapide
Thank you. Appressi, ne vorrai tu, contaminate assai, non fur le patrie selve e i tempi aditi dall'aquile latine, ormai di prendo oziosa, non può starsi la spada.
Thank you. Thank you. sofferse la prima volta quel fato romano che mi rende rubella al tempio.
Nostro amor.
tutto e il sia versato. Ma lasciarti, ma lasciarti volvo sio.
Oh, lasciarmi.
Domani allora è stessa vera.
Troppo tormentato. Perché?
Norma's wrath knows no bounds. The man for whom she betrayed her own people has now betrayed her. That was Act One of Bellini's Norma, live from the Met, starring Angela Meade, Jamie Barton, Joseph Calleja, and Matthew Rose, conducted by Joseph Colinari, and our concertmaster today is David Chan.
Well, Mary Jo, that trio.
Norma, that trio, yes.
Norma carries us through such a torrent of emotions, blame, rage, regret, and it all set so brilliantly and challengingly by Bellini.
It is a wonder to hear all that put together, isn't it? That trio especially.
It's astonishing. All the characters voice their mixed emotions, but there's a line of emotional energy, a through line that comes from Norma that really pulls us into what this woman is going through.
Right. I'm Mary Jo Heath. Commentator Ira Siff is with me. Coming up in this intermission, we're going to go backstage and speak with all our stars. The Mets general manager, Peter Gelb, will stop by the radio booth for a chat. And we're also going to hear from Susan Graham, who's here as the Merry Widow. Don't go away.
We're glued to our seats and we'll rejoin New York in a couple of minutes after the Met have an advertising break. In the meantime, here's a word about our carol competition.
Christmas on Radio 3.
Once again, we're on a hunt for a brand new carol. Our judges have now whittled down the hundreds of entries to a short list of six.
The voting now is open.
Which will you pick? To vote, register at the Radio 3 website, where you can listen to all six carols and find full terms and conditions. Voting closes at 5 o'clock on the 21st of December. The winning carol will be announced on Breakfast on Friday the 22nd and then played throughout Christmas Day on Radio 3.
Who will win, you can decide. And while you're doing that, make sure you head to the Opera on 3 pages of the Radio 3 website. There's the schedule of the upcoming Met broadcasts there, along with the details of all of Radio 3's live and recorded broadcasts from British opera houses. And don't forget that there's an opera broadcast each Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Radio 3. And this coming Thursday, there's a performance of Chabrier's comic opera L'Étoile, conducted by Mark Elder and recorded last year for the first time ever at the Royal Opera House. It was actually first performed in 1877 and was so successful that there were 48 performances in its first run. Penny Gore will introduce the opera on Thursday afternoon, so don't miss it. Now, let's return to the Met for a short feature on Bellini's Norma.
Norma premiered in Milan on December the 26th, 1831. Here are some other things that were in the air at that time. In St. Petersburg, imperial censors finally allowed the publication of an epic play that had been written 5 years earlier. Boris Godunov by the young Alexander Pushkin depicted Russia's civil strife and wars with neighboring Poland 2 centuries earlier. But recent conflicts between the Russian Empire and her province of Poland were in the headlines that year as the Russians crushed a Polish independence movement. The Warsaw native Frédéric Chopin, who was living in Paris, composed his revolutionary etude in memory of his country's failed uprising. In Paris, Chopin met refugees from his homeland and from other countries in political turmoil. France itself had undergone a revolution just the year before, and the capital was buzzing with ideas and creativity. The composers Rossini, Liszt, and Berlioz were active there, and Victor Hugo published several books that year, including Notre Dame de Paris, better known in English as The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And across the Atlantic, 5-year-old Dom Pedro of Braganza was elevated to the imperial throne of Brazil, which he was to hold for almost 60 years. This emperor would go on to become famous as a patron of the arts and sciences, in touch with such diverse talents as Alexander Graham Bell, Louis Pasteur, and Richard Wagner. These are just some of the things that were happening in the world when Norma had its world premiere in 1831. We are live at the Metropolitan Opera, and we're in the intermission of Bellini's Norma. Well, it's our third broadcast of the season, but it's our first intermission, so we're delighted to go backstage and welcome our correspondent, Lauren Toulagian, who's talking with our leading ladies.
Thank you, Mary Jo. So good to be with you and Ira again, and so good to be backstage with Angela Mead and Jamie Barton. Hello.
Hi. Hi.
That Act One finale is incredible. What kind of emotional state are you in now? You look kind of relaxed, but really...
It's nap time.
Is it nap time?
I wish it were.
Angela?
But no. Kind of in a stupor, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I always come off stage in a bit of a stupor after that. You know, it's a lot of energy expenditure yelling at a tenor. So, you know, come backstage and just kind of buzzing and also kind of need a nap.
Well, the tenors usually deserve it. So, you know, who
Absolutely.
Better to yell at?
Exactly.
Angela, you sang Casta Diva so beautifully. I can see why this aria has been... such a calling card for you.
Thank you.
Tell me about getting to it so quickly in a performance. Is that a good thing?
Well, people always ask me that, and I say, well, I sang in a bunch of competitions where I always started with it, so it's kind of like doing it in the opera, in addition to the recitative, which I never sang in competition, but yeah.
Yeah. Jamie, tell us about Adelgisa, the way we learn about her character through that wonderful entrance, Shayna, the duets, and the trio.
Yeah, she kind of gets a slow introduction, I think. Although I do kind of launch into my aria, not nearly as tough as Casta Diva, I think. But Adelgisa is she's a complex character. I feel lucky to get to be a mezzo because we always get the complex, you know, tortured character. So at the top of the aria of the opera, she's in love with Poliana, and she's not supposed to be in love with anybody.
Mm. Sounds a little like my character.
Yeah, right? It's almost like we're very similar.
Twins?
Well, speaking of Adelgisa, and you just brought it up, the role has been sung by sopranos and mezzos.
Oh,
so
yeah.
How would you describe that vocal writing that makes it work?
Well, it makes it work that we're doing it in the low key. which is only, I should say, it's only, it's dropped by a whole step in the second duet. That's the only difference between the two.
You shouldn't tell everybody the secret.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a pretty wide open known secret, I think.
Yeah.
But no, the vocal writing really is very similar to Norma's when we get into the duets. In both duets, we both have a set of pages where we're singing the exact same thing.
Mm.
Different words, exact same tune. So it's really the same tessitura as the soprano. As luck would have it, the sopranos I've sung it with have been very willing to let me be a mezzo when I had to be a mezzo.
Next time, I don't know.
I keep on being nice to you. Maybe you'll keep on letting me be a mezzo.
Angela, in just our last 30 seconds, we're so excited about Rossini Semiramide coming up in the spring. Hasn't been here for 25 years. Are you excited about bringing
it
back?
I'm super excited. I remember 9 years ago I sang it at Caramore, and I remember watching the DVD and thinking, what an amazing production. I would love to do that sometime. They'll probably never bring it back. And then here we are. So you never
voila.
Know.
Angela Mead and Jamie Barton, thanks for a few minutes during your final performance of Norma right here at the Met.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. We're live backstage. Mary Jo and I are back to you while I look for Pollione and Oroveso.
Thanks, Lauren. We're listening to Norma by Vincenzo Bellini with a libretto by Felice Romani based on a play by Alexandre Sumet. This production is by David McVicker with the set by Robert Jones, costumes by Moritz Junge, lighting design by Polly Constable, and movement direction by Leah Hausman. The production was a gift of Veronica Atkins. The chorus master is Donald Palumbo. Musical preparation is by Joel Revson, Carol Isaac, Jonathan C. Kelly, and Brian Waghorn. The assistant stage directors are Eric Sean Fogel, Stephen Pickover, and Paula Williams. The stage band conductor is Gregory Buchalter. The prompter is Carol Isaac. And the Italian diction coach is Gildo D'Annunzio. Christabel Langen is our stage manager. So, Ira, Semiramide in the spring.
Very excited about that. You know, they were talking about the different vocal ranges, and Norma was written for some of the great singers of that time. Giuditta Pasta and Giulia Grisi were Norma and Adelgisa, and Cole Braun, the wife of Rossini, created the role of Semiramide, another great singer. So they're following in formidable footsteps.
They certainly are. Well, we understand that things are already backstage again, so we're going to head back to Lauren Toulagian, who's talking with Joseph Kalea and Matthew Rose.
Thanks again, Mary Jo. Okay, let's get right to it, fellas. Joseph Kalea and Matthew Rose. Matthew as the Druid chief Oroveso and Joseph as Roman consul Pollione, you two are mortal enemies and also, frankly, pretty hot-headed. So are you guys getting along okay backstage? What's happening, people?
Well, luckily, actually, everyone that has been involved in the whole production has been so lovely and collegial. I mean, every single person, from the chorus, the orchestra, the conductor, every single person has been so wonderful. It's been a fantastic team effort to get this show on the road. You know, we had a wonderful rehearsal period way back. We started 4 months ago rehearsing this. And luckily, Joe's one of the nicest guys in opera, so we've had a really good time when we haven't been on stage trying to kill each other with our stage swords.
I had to give him a bottle of very expensive Bordeaux, Saint-Emilion, for that comment. Thank you, Matthew, for honoring the agreement. No, but seriously, though, I really believe that I second completely what Matthew Rose said. It was a really wonderful period. I think McVicar is incredibly good with artists, and I loved singing with all my colleagues, with all the three different Normas and, of course, the different Adalgisa. Mm.
Matthew, talk to us about Oroveso's music. He's hungering for war. He's a fairly gritty character, and yet, this being bel canto, the music is so beautiful. So how do you handle that contrast?
Yeah, so this is where the genius of David McVicar comes in, because he wants the drama to come to the forefront, no matter what the music is suggesting. What we really need to imply and to impose on the acting and the singing, actually, is this kind of this lust for revenge and for getting the Romans out of Gaul as quickly as possible. You know, that he worked, there was a group of actors that he worked with very hard with, and you know, just to make it as real as possible, that we were a group of very angry tribal men wanting the Romans out of Gaul as quickly as possible.
Joseph Pollione has just made Norma and Adelgisa brokenhearted and furious, and he seems completely unrepentant. So do you sympathize with the guy at all?
The short answer is no. I mean, he is, you have to take it in context of this is Gaul. This is, he's an occupier, he's a Roman, he's a very powerful man, powerful physically. His position is very powerful, and obviously he thinks he can just go and take what he wants. So it's a horrible role to play with some of the most difficult music, and of course it is quite an ungrateful role. But he is the only one in the opera that does an incredible journey, because he starts from being cad, arrogant, and even passive aggressive with Adalgisa and Norma, and then he repents towards the end, when it comes to the beautiful duet with Norma for A Troppo Tardi, when he realizes what a bad person he was.
Well, thank you both for a few minutes backstage. Your love hearing you sing and speaking with you too, Joseph Kalea and Matthew Rose. I'm Lauren Toulagian, and we're live backstage at the Met. Mary Jo, back to you and Mr. Peter Gelb in the radio booth.
Well, thank you, Lauren. And yes, this is our first intermission broadcast of the season, so it's great to have Met General Manager Peter Gelb with us in the radio booth. Hi, Peter.
Thanks so much, Mary Jo. It's great that the Met season is now beginning once again on the radio, and as always, we're so grateful for all the Met audience members who listen in around the world. You know, this is a very difficult period for the Met right now. As I'm sure Met opera fans know, we've been going through experiencing some problems. And, you know, I think it's very important for all of our fans to also know, though, that as we weather these difficult times, that also the Met is such an extraordinarily strong company. I mean, you can't imagine how thrilling it is for me and I'm sure for all the audiences to hear a performance like today's, which I think exemplifies the artistic resiliency of this brilliant company, which has lasted and weathered numerous crises during its 133 or 4 year of history. I just want our listeners to know that the Met has been perhaps slightly shaken recently, but it stands strong, and that it is dedicated to continuing to present the highest level of artistic excellence on the stage for our audiences in the Opera House and the ones who listen in on the radio. And this is a company of 1,600 full-time and opera performers and artisans, and the entire company is dedicated to presenting opera in the highest possible level, and that will never change now or in the future. And I should also add, you know, we have this wonderful film about the Met called The Opera House, which is a new documentary. It's going to be seen in movie theaters in January, the middle of January. And I think, an interesting kind of metaphor, perhaps, for some of the troubles that we're going through today, because the Met, you know, has, as I said earlier, has had trials and tribulations throughout its history. And in the 50s and 60s, when the film is about the period in the 50s and 60s when the Met was moving from its old home to its new quarters here at Lincoln Center. And these were difficult times for the company, and times of great cultural change. And one of the stars of our film is the great Leontine Price, who opened the new Met in 1966. And even now, at the age of 91, her wit is sparkling, and
amazing.
Her personality is extraordinary. And at one point in the film, when she sort of assesses the history, the past history of the Met and its future, she says, "Trust me, my dear, the Met will endure." And that's, I think, a good catchphrase for all of us today.
Well, I've seen that movie, and I was totally captivated and captivated by her, and I'm sure all of her fans will want to go see it. We could have titled it Leontine Price Presents the Opera House, as far as I go.
Well, you know, there never has been, to my knowledge, a film about Leontine. So this sort of, even though it's about many other things, in addition to Leontine, she has such a strong and vibrant personality that she kind of dominates the film to a certain extent, and it's a great testament to her and her career.
Yeah. Well, it's the third week of our Saturday broadcast season, and we have some holiday special offerings on tap coming up, don't we?
Well, you know, we're in full performance mode right now. We have, as you know, and our listeners know, the Met is always performing typically four operas in repertory during any given week. We have our brand new revival of this wonderful Richard Jones production of Hansel and Gretel, which doesn't have a gingerbread house, but it has a wonderful kitchen in which the witch attempts to cook her victims, but instead gets cooked herself, and an extraordinary cast. Donald Runicles, who's a great guest conductor here at the Met for this production, and who has conducted Hansel and Gretel around the world, said to me after the dress rehearsal the other day, he said, "You know, this is the best cast I've ever conducted," and I certainly would agree with him. In Lisette Oropeza, we have fabulous Gretel and Tara Erot, who earlier in the season made her Met debut as Nikolaus in Tales of Hoffman, now plays the pants role of Hansel. And we also have star turns for Dolores Ajic as the not very responsible mother of the two children, and Quinn Kelsey, the rising American baritone star, as the father, and great Wagnerian character tenor Gerhard Siegel, who normally, or I shouldn't say normally, has been heard at the Met numerous times as Mima in the Ring Cycle, is the Wicked Witch in drag.
Oh, he's just the best.
So it's a great cast and really fun for families. It's sung in English, so we have children coming and their parents and grandparents too.
So, and we also have The Marriage of Figaro back this month.
Right, we have a great two casts in The Marriage of Figaro. The one that's being broadcast in, I guess it's next in two Saturdays or.
That one's next week.
Next week, sorry. Well, that one has a wonderful cast, and then we switch casts as well. So the cast that will be heard on the radio features the very notable debut of the soprano Christiane Karg, who I've been looking forward to hearing on the stage of the Met for several years now, and finally she's arrived, and she's fabulous, and she has a wonderful cast of colleagues as well. And then, for those people local, closer to New York, who can come to the Opera House, the cast switches to Nadine Sierra as the Countess, and or rather Nadine Sierra as Susanna, and Eileen Perez as the Countess, and Isabel Leonard and as Cherubino, and Marius Kvitschin as the Count, and Ildor Abrazakov as Figaro. So. And that's our second cast. Mm-hmm. So,
we have about a minute left. You want to tell us a little bit about what's happening on New Year's Eve and other couple of other things?
Well,
maybe?
New Year's Eve, of course, is the opening night of our new production of Tosca, which has been much awaited. New production by Sir David McVicar, with a cast that has gone through some changes and machinations, which we're thrilled with right now. It's Sonia Yoncheva making her role debut as Tosca, but she's also made her role debuts at the Met before as Mimi and Violetta, and she's a very courageous soprano and a very great one. And she's joined by Vittorio Grigolo as Cavaradossi and Zeljko Lucic as Scarpia. It's a terrific cast and a production that sort of harkens back to the glorious sets and splendor of Tosca's of the past at the Met. And I know our audiences are looking forward to that.
And we've got so many other things coming up later in the season as well. Yannick Nezet-Séguin, our music director designate, will be here for a couple of things.
Well, we're thrilled to have him back for Parsifal and Elektra. And he's going to be doing so many different repertoire presentations at the Met over the coming seasons as he prepares to become a full-time music director.
Well, thanks, Peter. It's great to see you. Glad to have you on our broadcast here. Took 3 weeks to make it happen to have an intermission, but glad you could join us today.
I'm thrilled to be with you and looking forward to the rest of the season. Thanks so much.
So, as you heard, we've got a lot to look forward to in our new broadcast season, and that includes another star turn for the incomparable mezzo-soprano Susan Graham. She's back as Hannah Glavary in Lehar's The Merry Widow in our production by acclaimed Broadway director and choreographer Susan Stroman. During a chat we had recently, Graham told me how she views Hannah, a character she's loved performing for nearly 20 years.
She's essentially a simple girl who found herself in the middle of an extraordinary life. And that is kind of the description of my journey as well. You know, I come from the Southwest and I find myself in an international operatic stratosphere, and it's always full of wonder. And in fact, one of my opening lines is Hannah Glavary, and she comes into this beautiful party in Paris and she says, "Remember, I'm a stranger here, a little starry-eyed. If I were a sophisticate, I'd take it in my stride." And I sometimes feel like that. And I happen to be playing opposite one of my very best friends in the world, the wonderful Paul Groves. Coming into these roles where, you know, they are old flames reunited, and Paul and I have done so many operas together, not only here but all around the world, it's just great to have a great friend opposite me in this very comedic and yet romantic, beautiful role.
Have you ever danced before in anything you've done together?
On stage?
All these years? On stage. Well, there are probably stories to be told behind that comment. But you've never had to practice dancing with Susan Stroman looking over your head before.
No,
that's a new one.
No, I don't think we've ever actually waltzed in a production together. I don't think Così fan tutti or Don Giovanni, there's much opportunity for our characters to waltz.
No. How's this lady changed for you over time?
Oh.
She must have.
Oh, yeah. She's gotten a little sassier, a little less cautious. Her emotions are a little closer to the surface. She's less guarded. And she's just pretty direct.
Mm-hmm.
Again, running parallel with the person who's playing her. In fact, the chorus gentlemen say, We love a girl who speaks her mind. So, you know, here we go again, life imitating art.
There you go. So let's talk about some of the challenges that distinguish operetta from opera, like namely all this dialogue.
All this talking. It takes some getting used to go back and forth between singing and speaking. And I've learned more about it. The more I've done it, mm-hmm. I've learned that, you know, there's a certain way to articulate the voice because we use completely different resonators for speaking than we do for singing.
Yeah.
It's a different mechanism,
yeah.
And different musculature and different resonating chambers come into play. So you can sing a lot louder than you can speak.
How would you describe Lehár's sort of musical language to people? I mean, when you were telling them about what this opera is like musically?
It's frothy and effervescent and sentimental in the best possible sense. It makes you feel good, and it's champagne bubbles. I love this role more than any other operetta role I've ever sung. And whenever I sing other ones like La Belle Hélène or Grand Duchesse, I love those operettas, but I always say they're not The Merry Widow because there's no Villa. Villa is the hallmark song of this opera and of really this character for sure. And everybody knows it, and it makes everybody feel good when they hear it. And it's beautifully staged, and it's just a simple moment early in the second act, and it's so much fun to just bring this tune and try to do my best to spin it into people's hearts.
Yeah, that Viennese stuff.
It's
musical,
flavorful,
operetta.
And it's, you know, I can smell the hot mulled wine in Vienna at Christmas time just by hearing that music.
Mezzo-soprano Susan Graham, who's here this holiday season starring in Lehár's The Merry Widow. And Ira, I can see you have your dancing shoes already for all the waltzes and things in that. The Merry Widow will be our broadcast 2 weeks from today on December the 30th.
And we'll be back with Mary Jo Heath in a few moments.
Experience Christmas around Europe with a day of festive concerts on BBC Radio 3. Our journey takes in seasonal Scandinavian music from Helsinki and Copenhagen. Music from the 6 organs of the Basilica in Mafra, Portugal. And Dmitry Nenov's joyful Christmas oratorio from Bulgaria. Join me, Ian Skelly, for Christmas Around Europe. Tomorrow from 1 o'clock, and then available on the BBC Radio 3 website.
Now let's head back to the Met in New York.
Here's a preview of next Saturday's matinee broadcast live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera. Le Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro, Mozart's serious comedy about the clash between people's best and worst selves. Adam Plaketka is Figaro, the servant who thinks he's in charge of a noble household. Christiana Karik is his fiancée, the maid Susanna, who actually seems a lot more in charge of things than Figaro. Luca Pizzaroni is Count Almaviva, the lord of the house, but perhaps the last to know what's really going on. Rachel Willis Sorensen is his countess, hoping to win back her husband's love however she can. And Serena Malfi is the page boy Carabino, a rush of adolescent energy. Harry Bickett leads the chorus and orchestra in this one crazy day of deceit, confusion, and ultimate harmony. Mozart's Le Nozze di Figaro, live from the Met, and next Saturday's broadcast.
You know, just hearing that little bit of Figaro makes me eager to listen to the whole thing.
Doesn't it? Those arias are so wonderful, of course, but the ensembles in this opera and the way the ensembles are linked together, you know how I feel about the Act Two finale. Oh, yeah. It's just the best thing ever. Maestro Bickett was telling us that no matter how many times you hear it, it engages you all over again.
Yeah, I really feel that's true of the story, the drama. The libretto by Lorenzo da Ponte explores class issues, relationships between men and women in a way that's still so timely. And Mozart sets it to music in a way that makes these characters feel like real flesh and blood people that we can identify with.
That's right. For all that it's a comedy, nobody is a caricature. Every single character has some music that's soulful as well as parts that are hilarious. Le Nozze di Figaro will be our broadcast next Saturday. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and I'm with our commentator Ira Siff live at the Metropolitan Opera. We're about to hear Act Two of Bellini's Norma. Ira, let's talk through it, the second half of this heartbreaking tragedy.
Well, in the orchestral prelude, the cellos play a long line melody full of pathos, and this sets us up for the dramatic scena for Norma.
We see she's overwhelmed with despair. Knife in hand, she approaches her two young children who are asleep. She intends to spare them from a life of disgrace by killing them. But she's unable to force herself to do it.
She sings the melody we heard on the cello as she reflects on her love for these children. Then she breaks that train of thought and she shifts to declamatory lines attempting to justify the murder.
She declares their crime is that they are Puglioni's children. But then she drops the knife, crying out, they are my children. And she calls in Clotilda to summon Adalgisa. When the young woman arrives, we come to the second moving duet for her and Norma. It's a classic grand duet with several sections. Norma begins by begging Adalgisa to take the children with her when she goes to Rome with Puglioni and to protect them. But Adalgisa has resolved to persuade Puglioni to return to Norma. At first, Norma's too proud to allow this, but Adalgisa urges her to consider the children. Mira o Norma. Look at these beloved little ones.
And each singer has a strophe of this exquisite melody. Then they join together in harmony as Adalgisa softens Norma's resolve. After Norma yields, the women swear eternal friendship, and they share a bright melody in the Cabaletta with rising figures in close harmony, first legato, then staccato.
Yeah, it gives us a sense of optimism. But in the next scene, Norma's father, Oroveso, informs the Druids that Puglioni will soon be replaced by a new, harsher Roman commander. The Druids are ready to revolt, but Oroveso advises them to be patient.
In the construction of this aria, Oroveso's firm melodic line with the choral interjections, it lets us sense his unity with his people. You know, perhaps they've felt the lack of clarity in Norma's guidance.
Yes, Norma is alone, wavering between anxiety and hope, when Clotilda brings her terrible news that Puglioni has refused to return to her. Norma is overcome with fury, and she strikes the gong, summoning the Druids, and calls for war on Rome.
She spurs the Druids to raise their voices in battle cry, war, blood, carnage, and they respond with a thrilling, aggressive chorus.
They prepare for a ritual which requires a sacrificial victim. And just then, Puglioni is dragged in. He was discovered trespassing on sacred ground. Norma orders everyone away on the pretext of questioning him, and she confronts Puglioni. This is a very intense duet.
In seething, low tones, she gloats that he is finally in her power, but his reaction is calmly defiant.
She offers to spare his life if he will swear never to see Adalgisa again, but he refuses. Only when she threatens to harm Adalgisa herself does he finally beg for mercy.
As her music turns fierce, as she says, hundreds of Romans will be slaughtered and Adalgisa will be burned at the stake, we hear an ironically gleeful melody that we first heard in the overture as Norma tells Puglioni that she feeds upon his grief.
She then calls back the Druids and announces that there will be a new victim for the sacrifice, a priestess who broke her vows with a Roman. But just as Norma is about to announce who it is, she finds herself unable to condemn Adalgisa. And instead, she confesses her own guilt.
Norma seems to express everything in one simple phrase, son io, it is I. And it's a wonderful theatrical coup from Bellini. Time stops as the people are incredulous. And then Norma leads an extraordinary ensemble.
Yes, she addresses Puglioni directly. This is the heart you betrayed. Puglioni is so moved by her courage and nobility in this moment that his love is reawakened, and he embraces the idea of dying with her. Norma's final plea is to her father. She implores him to watch over her children.
Yes, she says, do not let them be the victims of my fatal error. Bellini gives Norma a melody so moving it's impossible to refuse her. Over interjections from the chorus and from Orovezo himself, she repeatedly begs, Father, do you promise me?
Yeah, he breaks down weeping and agrees. With that, Norma is content, and together with Puglioni, she walks toward the pyre as the curtain falls. We'll hear in order of appearance Angela Meade as Norma, Michelle Bradley as Clotilda, and Jamie Barton as Adalgisa. Matthew Rose is Orovezo, and Joseph Calea is Puglioni. Joseph Colinari leads the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus as we're coming up on Act Two of Bellini's Norma. You heard them mention this is the final performance of Norma this season at the Met, and we're so happy we get to share it with you on a Saturday matinee broadcast. Here comes Maestro Colinari. He's asking the orchestra to rise and share in the applause, shaking hands with David Chan. So let's hear Act Two of Bellini's Norma.
Thank you. Oh! Separarci e nullo lasciar sospetto del fanito intento.
E finge sempre.
Variare il giorno stesso.
sacrilego nemico, e chi ti spinse a violar queste temute soglie, a sfidar l'ira di un insul. Ferisci, ma non interrogarmi.
Intendo. Oh.
The high priest Norma, having revealed her sins to her people, is joined by her lover Polione as she walks towards the sacrificial flames. That was Bellini's Norma in a live broadcast coming to you from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. The final performance of Norma this season at the Met, the opera that was our opening night new production. Right. This production premiered back then. And now the curtain is back up on the Metropolitan Opera chorus. They are the Druids of the ancient land of Gaul here, a bow from them.
And that Guerra chorus was so exciting.
Oh, yes. Here's Michelle Bradley, who played the role of Clotilda. She's a member of the Met's Lindemann Young Artist Development Program. She's a soprano from Versailles, Kentucky. Here are our twin boys, Christopher Reynolds and John Reynolds, who play the role of Norma's children. Lovely bow from you guys. Well done, fellas. They're about 6 years old. Here's our Oroveso, Matthew Rose, based from Brighton, England. Made his debut at the Met in 2011 as Collini in La Boheme, a role he sang earlier this season. This is his eighth role at the Metropolitan Opera. Here's Joseph Colea, our Polione, tenor from Malta. Made his debut as Rigoletto in 2006, his ninth role here. He sings all over Europe. He's going to be Faust and Mephistopheles in Munich later this season. Here's Jamie Barton, our Adalgisa, mezzo-soprano from Rome, Georgia. She sung five roles here. Last season, we heard her in Nabucco and as Yeji Baba in Rusalka. Remember that, Ira?
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful.
And next, we have Angela Mead, soprano from Centralia, Washington. Her seven roles at the Met we've heard her in. She'll be back in March as Semiramide, you heard her say during the interview. Now, she and Jamie Barton have a couple of amazing things in common. One, they were both winners of the Met's National Council in 2007. They've both won the Beverly Sills Award. They've both won the Richard Tucker Prize. Jamie's got her at the Cardiff Singer of the World competition, though by then Angela was off performing and being a pro, and Jamie was still doing competitions. Full cast bow for all of them, and now Angela Mead is going to go fetch our maestro. Here's Joseph Collinari. Maestro Collinari has led 16 operas at the Met since 2000. He's also the music director of the Glimmerglass Festival and the artistic director of opera at the Mannes School of Music here in New York, asking the orchestra to rise. And now all of them come down front and center for a bow. So all of that was to say that Angela Mead and Jamie Barton are two of the most accomplished singers of the younger generation of Americans who are on
Indeed.
Our stage today. Step down bows, Joseph Colea, Jamie Barton, Angela Mead, blowing kisses to the audience. And now all of them together. I like the two little kids. Boy, they came out very seriously and gave very deep bows.
They were very professional.
Very professional. And now the curtain is going down. We're going to have one more quickie. Well, curtain stopped halfway, and so did the cast. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is David Frost, and the operations director is John Kurzweil. Ed Hartley, Robert Hewitt, and David Bullard are the broadcast engineers. Our senior radio producer and editor is Ellen Keel. The show producer is John Bischoff. The producer is William Berger. And the associate producer is Lee Ellen Vem. We had production assistance from Yolanda Williams, Michael Griebel, and Geza Kudlak. The broadcast stage manager is Laurie Squire. The executive producers are Mia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. The Metropolitan Opera's music director designate is Yannick Nazet-Séguin. And the general manager is Peter Gelb.
Thank you, Mary Jo Heath and
Ira
Siff.
The
Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. If you're not around for the broadcasts, you can listen again for 30 days in the UK, and all the details are on the Radio 3 website, where you'll find the full listings of our upcoming operas as well. And next week's Opera on Three from the Met broadcast is Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro. That's next Saturday at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3, starring Rachel Willis-Sorensen, Christian Karg, Serena Malfi, Luca Pisaroni and Adam Plachetka. Harry Bickett conducts the Metropolitan Opera, Orchestra and Chorus.
Do you know what? Christmas always takes me back, sitting round my nan's with me granddad.
That sounds quite enjoyable to me.
It's madness.
There's nothing I like more than making the kids laugh.
You made me some cake.
We'll be having Swiss roll with custard for dessert on Christmas Day.
Oh, I could eat the whole slice right now.
Well, you know, I may have snuck a glass at some point in the last 1,500 years.
That's gone straight to my head, yes.
I want to give you the best Christmas ever, but I cannot do it all on my own.
Oh, this is the Christmas season. People overindulge.
You don't get better than that.
Join us for Christmas Together on BBC One.
And this is BBC Radio 3. Good evening, I'm Chris Barrow. At 10 o'clock, Sarah Moore-Peach and Robert Warby present Here and Now, highlighting performances from last month's Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival. That's in about 10 minutes' time. Then at midnight, it's Geoffrey Smith's Jazz, and he continues his annual tradition of providing us with music from prominent jazz stars, including Ella Fitzgerald and Dizzy Gillespie. Geoffrey Smith is getting the party started in a little over 2 hours. Before that, we're going to stay with Mozart here, and from The Marriage of Figaro, this is Pian, pian in l'andrò più presso, which translates to softly, softly, I'll approach her. It's sung primarily by Angelika Kirchschlager, performed by Concerto Köln, and conducted by René Jacobs.
Apostati per me.
Già che così vi piace.
piacente femmina che sposa di buon cor di mia anima.
Ne ho volato,
carino,
venito
per belle, e bella da belle, mi pizzica, mi stuzzica, non perdiam tempo e vano.
Mozart's Pian Piano in L'Andro più presto with Angelica Kerschlager and performed by Concerto Köln. And just a quick reminder that next week's Opera on Three from the Met broadcast is Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro. Of course, it's next Saturday at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
Christmas on Radio 3, we're giving you our mission. Who will the winner be in our carol competition?
Once again, we're on a hunt for a brand new carol. Our judges have now whittled down the hundreds of entries to a short list of six.
The voting now is open.
Which will you pick? To vote, register at the Radio 3 website, where you can listen to all six carols and find full terms and conditions. Voting closes at 5:00 on the 21st of December. The winning carol will be announced on breakfast on Friday the 22nd and then played throughout Christmas Day on Radio 3.
That's the next thing you can vote for now that Strictly Come Dancing has finished. At midnight, it's Geoffrey Smith's Jazz, so join us then for that. But right now at 10:00, it's time for this week's Here and Now, presented by Sarah Moore-Peach and Robert Warby.
Welcome to Here and Now and the final programme of highlights from this year's Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival.
Tonight we bring you a major new work by the brilliant young composer, opera singer and all-round fireball Laura Bowler, her provocative, politically charged FFF. And we feature two pieces from the rare UK appearance of Polwechsel, the iconic Austrian-based band founded in the 90s who skirt the edges of improv and contemporary composition. Tonight's highlights include Klaus Lang at the organ and the whole band joined by former member British saxophonist John Butcher.
But first, a piece by Stephen Davison from the Thursday lunchtime concert given at Phipps Hall by Explore Ensemble. This is Elusive Tangibility 2, Firelife. I asked Stephen about the title. Presumably, Firelife is a sort of subtitle.
It is a subtitle to an extent. Each piece in the cycle refers to something that you can see but you can't touch, even though it might have a sort of physical effect upon you. For example, in the case of fire, obviously you can hurt yourself very, very badly on some fire, but you can't touch it, or you can put your finger through a flame. So regardless of its sort of physical capabilities, there's nothing that you can touch. This was a student piece. I wrote it during my master's, and we were asked to write something with a sort of literary influence. And I remember at the time reading Murakami's Kafka on the Shore, and there's a moment in the book where this guy who's on the run, and he finds himself in this cabin in the woods, and he lights a fire, and he contemplates this little flame that he's made and how it's both sort of calming but also incredibly destructive. And this piece has these upward rushing gestures that are, when you look at a fire and you can see how it repeats a similar gesture but never in quite the
slightly
same
different
way.
Each time,
yeah,
isn't
exactly.
It?
Exactly, slightly yeah. Different each time.
But you recognise it. You
exactly.
Recognise the shape
yes.
And the energy of it.
Yeah, precisely. And then it just settles into something comforting and warming.
And what about the instrumentation? What are the forces you've used in the piece?
So this piece is for clarinet and string trio, because other pieces in the cycle are for other combinations, from solo clarinet to symphony orchestra with a female voice.
Well, let's hear your piece, Stephen. This is Elusive Tangibility 2, Firelife, performed here by Explore Ensemble.